This is the October 5 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Ellen Dearden of AgriView. She's in Morton, Illinois. Brian Stark joins us from the Andersons in Mansfield, Illinois. And Garrett Toy is here from AgTraderTalk.com out of Stockton, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org. Let's begin, as we usually do, by getting a list of items that we should discuss for the day. Ellen Dearden in Morton, Illinois at AgriView. What's on your mind?
I'd really like to talk about the big drop we've seen in crude oil prices this week. You know, ordinarily we expect to see corn kind of mirror crude's action, and we certainly didn't get that on the upside when crude went up over $90. And today on Thursday, we didn't get downside action in the corn from a big drop in crude prices.
Brian Stark, what is on your list for the day?
I think the biggest thing is what the producer's going to do once they fill their on-farm space, and how do they market that, what the right risk tools are as far as their overrun goes. Early harvest yields have been better than expected in west central Indiana and east central Illinois, and I think the space conundrum as we progress to October is going to present some decisions the farmer has to make.
And Garrett Toy of AgTraderTalk.com in Stockton, Illinois, what's on your list?
Well, I think it's interesting that we potentially have put a peak in barge freight on the Illinois River. That's been a big topic of conversation here the last 3-4 weeks has been the logistics issues on the river and what's doing the cash basis and trying to steer grain away from the river. But it seems that may be topping here, and we will not have a similar situation as last year where they continue to spike higher. But also, minor tweaking of the national yield from this point forward. I think we have a pretty decent idea of where we're at as far as the corn and soybean S&Ds are, but how we position from this point forward.
So I would like to stay with the river system to begin with. We'll come back to Ellen in just a second. She's on the Illinois River there near Peoria and Morton. However, Garrett, as related to the river system in general along the Mississippi, what tells you that we've reached a peak in freight?
Well, barge freight is, at this point last year, we were trading Illinois River and St. Louis River freight, 1,800% of tariff, 2,000% of tariff. And freight has really has come off here this week. This was the week last year where freight really surged. And we're not seeing that. In fact, we're seeing a little bit weaker. Now, function of that, we haven't necessarily seen a big improvement in river stages per se, but the comments from the freight brokers are, the shippers have what they have in front of them. And I think potentially that's a function of this lack of demand, if you will. I mean, we it either tells us one of two things: either the freight shipper did a better job of purchasing their freight last year, or, the market's done its job where it has channeled grain away from the river. That may be a function of this lack of demand, this poor export book in soybeans and this poor corn book, which is a function of the long tail of that South American crop.
Anything, Ellen, from your perspective that you want to add?
I would certainly feel that corn has been siphoned off the river into the processing market, but our basis is wider than normal, and I think we are probably close to the halfway point in corn harvest locally, but the river system is just, there's nothing moving, there's nothing there, and I think that barges were secured early, and they are afloat, and I think that's about all that's going to happen for right now till we get into a resurgence of water coming down the river from wherever, from the Missouri or from northern part of Illinois.
So your argument is that the river system won't be used logistically very much to move grain out, whether it's corn or beans?
I would say for the next month's time that the river system will be very quiet.
And does that jive, Garrett, with what you're telling me?
It should, given the export demand. You know, the main demand is going to be the feed in domestic and in the ethanol markets on the corn side and even on the crush side in soybeans. I agree. I mean, I think that, you know, unless something changes and perhaps there's still a window of opportunity. I mean, we did have, you know, a couple cargoes of corn sold to China in this morning's export sales report. You know, it seems like this China still has soybeans to purchase for December to January timeframes. But the export book is, you know, the percentage is less than what it was this point last year.
So, Brian, this brings me to you. Can you talk a little bit about demand within the domestic system for both corn and soybeans and what you feel like at this point?
Yeah, I think crush margins are really good on the bean side. From what we know, and obviously that's where the bulk of the demand is going to have to be carried. Ethanol demand has been really good. We're running through kind of the fall shutdown season right now, so ethanol stocks are relatively tight. But at the same time, we have to be really careful because driving demand is starting to slow down, and I think that's seasonal. As we approach the winter months, you start to see some of that, and there's a reluctance from, I think, the American consumer to continue to pay the higher gas prices here consistently going forward. So there could be some downward action on the ethanol side from corn usage, but I think that's what we've noticed all along. The export book, as Ellen and Garrett have mentioned, is very small. Doesn't feel like on a world stage that's going to improve anytime soon with the competition that we're seeing from Brazil and Argentina and the Ukraine and Russia on the wheat side. So I think ultimately that lends to interior basis pressure, especially if yields continue to be at expectation or above in some of these eastern areas. And I think that's why it's important the producer kind of thinks ahead a little bit, given the lack of demand. I think others have mentioned that the yield probably isn't going to fluctuate a lot. This really turns into a market that is looking at the demand side of the equation to determine where fair value is.
Ellen, what is it that drove corn prices higher during the bulk of this week through Thursday afternoon when we're recording?
Well, it appears to me that every time we would take December corn down in that 480 range, there were buyers available. And then we started going up over some of these moving averages, and technically we saw buyers come into this market. We had the highest close for December corn today on Thursday that we've had since the 4th of August. So there were buy stops above the market of above that 490 area, and we just kind of kept right on trucking. From a fundamental standpoint, there was a lot of upset in the Black Sea again. Supposedly, a ship hit a sea mine, and that kind of sparked this buying, and I think also flooding in the southern part of Brazil may have added it a little bit of bullish fuel to this. But we just, you know, we haven't been able to hang on to rallies, and so it'll be good to see what we can do going into a Friday close.
You're not convinced at this point, I take it.
Convinced that we have more upside to go?
Yes.
I think we have limited downside. I'll put it that way. Upside potential, we're going to stall out again, probably in that $5 to $5.10 range on the DEES futures. But, you know, downside, I think, is pretty limited, too. So we're pretty much just in a sideways trading range, but we did have an upside bounce today.
I'll turn to Garrett and Brian for an answer to this as well. But do you think basis will narrow or widen into the rest of October?
I'll take that, Brian, real quick. I think it will. If freight continues to weaken in here, I think that a basis will firm. We've already kind of seen it this week, and it's starting to be reflected a little bit in the spreads. We've had, case in point, the Novjan bean spread traded out as wide as 19 cents, and a lot of these bean spreads are starting to, they traded out as far as 20 and 3/4 cents on this low just 2 days ago. But it feels like these bean spreads with this freight collapsing basis firming up has kind of turned the corner here, and we're starting to see some of these wider carries start to come in. So basis should firm up. just a function on, at least on the river. And on the other hand, you know, with some of these bids that you're seeing out west and into the processor markets, I've heard 50 over trade, you know, some of these big numbers. You know, the bias is that they're going to get their fill here at some point, and those numbers will start to back off a little bit. So it just kind of depends on where your market's at is how your basis is going to react.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think ultimately we're seeing a slower transition in some eastern spots where the corn crop hasn't quite matured. Felt like just given the growing season, we were 10 days to 2 weeks later than normal. That's coming to fruition. And when you look at east central Illinois or west central Indiana, where my area is, we're probably looking at main corn harvest last half of October, where we'd clearly be in it right now. Guys are focused on soybeans. I do think that given the lack of an export program pressures the interior. So I think there's more risk to the downside for basis to widen, at least through this month. I think beans will be quicker to recover if the weather cooperates and guys have a good week to 10 days to focus on beans here in the next couple of weeks. You might see quicker bean basis appreciation from the domestic crusher, depending on how full it gets here over the next 2 weeks. Corn, I think it's going to take a while. I think, as Garrett mentioned, there's still some quick ship premium in areas, mostly to the northeast, but there's still some areas that are paying a premium to all fall. And that all, you know, given the farmer's ability to store, it feels like he's going to store more corn on farm than he may soybeans this fall, may not allow the basis to get as cheap in certain areas as one would think with a big crop and kind of average to below average demand. But I still think there's more risk to a wider basis, at least through the month of October, than a narrowing one.
This has you concerned, I take it, because farmers will be facing delivering across the scale and having to make a decision with wider, from your perspective, with a wider basis at the end of the month, at least in the eastern Corn Belt.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's the risk, because historically the farmer will fill his space first. And I think we've encouraged the producer to look at quick ship opportunities to get a good handle on their yield potential and take advantage of some of the volume they can't store. They know they're not going to be able to fit in their on-farm space, move it earlier versus waiting until the end where basis could be much wider.
Ellen, any discussion on that cash marketing side?
Yeah, I see a real reluctance in this particular trade area for country elevators to narrow basis, and I think that mentality will remain for another month, even though those elevators started the year pretty darn empty. Just the lack of real competition with the river and the processor on the corn side of things, I think means that we're going to continue in this area anyway till the 1st of November, continue to see wide corn basis. Bean basis, I think, could be a crapshoot.
I would like each of you to take on a different topic. Garrett Toy, I'll start with you. This is crop insurance. This is the month in which we'll get the harvest price. We're, 5 days in at this point. How should producers be thinking about this? Should they calculate it? Should they think it in as a cents per bushel to add on to whatever price they have to market with? Where are you putting it into your marketing plan?
There's a way to hedge the crop insurance payouts. You know, you can calculate whatever your coverage rates are. You know, by re-ownership, if you want, just for the month of October, because once the month of October goes by and we know what the fall premium or what the fall coverage level is, then essentially crop insurance goes away. There's, if you want to get cute, there's ways to do things of that sort. But yeah, as far as treating it, I mean, it's basically protecting the payment, because there's really no way that we're going to even come close to the touching the spring price. It's basically how much of that spring price, you know, are we going to lose? So, you know, there's certain ways. We have some producers that like to be a little bit more aggressive on it, where they'll buy some call coverage here. They were buying call coverage at like 475, 485 levels to try to lock in some of the potential of this rally for the spring crop insurance, or excuse me, fall crop insurance price, but it's not for everyone. It's more for an aggressive marketer.
Alan Dearden?
I feel that a strategy to protect your spring crop insurance good level is only really applicable for the guy who is having real difficulty with their production. So for the brunt of people in the central Midwest where the corn yields are going to be very strong, that's probably a moot point. However, once you get into western Iowa, eastern Nebraska, I would have no difficulty buying calls. But again, you don't need a lot of time coverage. So I think people need to keep that one in mind.
Brian Stark.
Yeah, I think the way we look at it a little bit in the East is, you know, your 80% trigger, ironically, we kind of set a floor in that 472-73 area where there's the bulk of policies to the country, and now we're approaching the 85% trigger, and that's assuming you grow APH at 502. So I think the producer really needs to think and sit down on the calculation, and if there's an opportunity where he knows he's only going to have APH, then I think he needs to think about different ways, as others have suggested. Maybe it's call coverage. Maybe it's just simply locking in the revenue that he's guaranteed in case the market were to, you know, fall lower than 473. He knows he has his insurance to kick in on 80% policy. But the minute we get above 502, you know, obviously you're not going to have that insurance coverage or that floor revenue anymore. And if the low were to happen, say, in November, and we rally through the month of October, then obviously that floor doesn't exist. So I think being nimble and knowing are you close to your APH can kind of dictate how you manage the price component of your policy here through the month.
I'm going to throw out just what I've been thinking about as it relates to this under constraints. So you have to push what you've got across the scale and make a decision about whether you're going to store or not. That's probably, 24 cents or thereabouts for corn. And depending on what you think the October average price is, I think about it in cents per bushel and just adding that back on to whatever price, cash price is to make my storage decision. Am I considering this in the wrong way? I guess, Brian, I'll start with you.
No, I think that's right. I think you have to determine if you can foresee where you think insurance. Personally, from my perspective, I think the market struggles. I think you asked Ellen earlier, does the market have more upside? I personally think it's going to languish in this area of no man's land between 472 and 502, which happen to be your two trigger points. So I think if you can kind of figure out where the average is going to be and look at where potential payment is and your offset to your storage, that's one way of financing the storage, so to speak, if you want to delay your pricing decisions. I think the biggest thing is once you get outside of the month of October, you know what your guarantee is. And beyond that, you have to think of the risk reward profile of how long you want to pay storage to hope for some upside because you no longer have that floor in place.
How much upside do we all think that there might be through January at this point? And I guess, Ellen, I'll start with you.
Well, I think the scenario is very different for corn than it is for beans, because I'm not sure that if you've got a minimum storage through, let's say, the first of the year for 24 cents, I don't think we've got 24 cents upside coming in the corn on the futures market. We may have a dime better on basis and maybe a dime on the board. So that doesn't make up your 24 cents, but I think you would be money ahead putting beans in storage, even commercial storage, paying a minimum charge, because I think there will be upside coming, and it's much easier to get 24 cents or whatever your minimum storage is on your beans into the first of the year, just given when you're looking at the basis, how much basis improvement there is into December and January versus October for beans.
Hey, Brian, just to double check, I am right about storage cost or close, correct?
Yeah, you're close. In East Central Illinois, I would say that the general consensus, that's pretty close, 24 cents to the first of the year. So, no, I would agree. I mean, when you think about the upside, I agree with Ellen that beans have more potential upside simply because the balance sheet is potentially tighter. Even if the crop grows in size, we have to prove we can ration exports below what we did this past year at prices that might be a dollar below. Not to say that we aren't doing that currently, but with the lack of Chinese buying. But I think that's a tougher sell. So there's upside there. But on the corn front, I think to put in storage, you know, your upside's fairly limited because we're being undercut by South American corn offerings in the world. So I don't foresee an opportunity. Maybe January, February, March, we might have some opportunity to pick up export corn business, but not anytime soon. And I think you're going to have to rely on basis appreciation because the board upside seems to be limited, maybe to, you know, the 5.10 to 5.25 area. And it's going to be hard to capture back those storage charges on corn.
And then I'll ask the same question, of course, Garrett, of you, but add the additional issue that there will be payments that producers need to make, and they probably haven't sold as much corn as maybe they would have liked to.
That's the impression that I get. And then that's kind of what was confirmed in the stocks report, is with on-farm stocks being the highest levels in 20-some-odd years. You know, the farmer selling is definitely has slowed. You know, not only were they potentially behind on new crop, but, you know, they've slowed on old crop. As far as cash is concerned around here, we're further north. Our harvest is still fairly early. And our cash situation is a little bit different. I mean, we're, you know, looking at cash bids locally here. We've got a 13-cent cash carry between now and October and December in corn. And we've got, you know, 21 cents in beans just from October to November. So, you know, I think I don't think there's a blanket explanation or a blanket answer for everyone. I think it's going to be locale or location driven. You know, around here, same storage costs, storage minimums, no brainer. And I think it's going to be, you got to maintain some flexibility because I do think that our markets are rail markets, and they are kind of determined by the Gulf and in the river. So if freight does continue to weaken and these bases starts to firm up, we're just so historically cheap, you know, because of these high freight levels. If we go back to normal levels, I mean, that could be 15, 20 cents of basis improvement if we get freight another 150, 300% of tariff cheaper than where we're at right now.
Last week, Ellen Dearden, many were talking about $100 crude oil as if it had already happened. Did not make that. This week, however, there has been a large drop in the price of crude oil. And as you have pointed out, that does impact the price of corn, or has in the past. What are you thinking about as it's related to those two markets?
Well, my overall thought is that crude prices rallied on a lot of hype and talk about not just $100 crude, but $150 crude coming out of one of the large banks. And that really got everybody excited. Now, bolstering that kind of thought was the maintaining the cut in Saudi Arabia's pumping for into the end of the year. But I think that really on the demand side of things, crude oil in the U.S. domestic is not that strong, but the export demand for crude remains rather robust. And so we need to keep watching that. But it seems to me that we're probably back into a trading range on crude, and more likely than not, the downside is probably close to $80, not that much downside. So we'll probably bounce around there in the next couple of months. That says to me that corn prices don't have to rally much, but maybe don't have to go down much either.
Brian, this would be something that the Andersons would be watching relatively closely as related to both Marathon Oil and ethanol and demand for ethanol. What are you hearing from inside the organization about crude and ethanol demand going forward?
Well, I think I mentioned it earlier in our discussion, but I think we have to be cognizant of the fact that ethanol demand as a whole may take a dip here as it seems like the consumer, we've seen driving demand start to slow down. And again, seasonal, we typically see that as we approach the winter months. But I think there's also reluctance from the consumer to continue to pay $3.75 to $4 a gallon gas to continue to drive when other costs that they are exposed to are inflated. So I think there is some risk for a slowdown, but I still feel confident personally that ethanol demand is going to remain strong here as we head into the end of the year, even with a slowdown and potentially higher crude leading to higher gasoline prices. But it's certainly something that bears watching, and I think need to be cognizant of that as a component of corn demand.
Next Thursday, Garrett, USDA will release the October crop production and world agricultural supply and demand estimates. Do you expect changes?
Minor at this point. I mean, we're 35% into harvest. Minor tweaking. I think, as Brian has said, the focus is more on demand at this point than supply. You know, we've got the acres behind us. The yield network that I help manage would suggest that corn yield could potentially come up, and soybean yields could potentially come down. But nothing, you know, I think the month of July, month of August, there was a lot of debate that was whether national corn yield would be sub, you know, 170 or 165, potentially that low. And at this point, I don't think that's in the cards.
Ellen Dearden, your thoughts on the USDA report?
I would anticipate on the supply side of things that we watch increases in corn demand, corn yields and bean yields, both in the state of Illinois, and cuts in Iowa that may compensate for that. But we're still going to have large carryouts, and that's the bottom line.
And Brian Stark.
Yeah, I agree with what Alan and Garrett both said. I don't expect many supply changes. We have to watch the demand sector. I know it's early, but we're behind pace in both corn and beans from where we normally are. And I think that's an area that the government could choose to cut back a little bit, although it's early and probably not like them to cut this early. But I think that's a risk that we have to pay attention to.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. I'll start with Garrett Toy of AgTraderTalk.com. Your final word for the day.
Well, I think it's interesting. You know, today was an interesting day with the short covering event. I think it largely was headline driven because of the C-mine issue, and that reiterates the issues that we're dealing with this Black Sea and still continuing Russian-Ukraine conflict. You know, it's going to be an interesting Friday. We closed above a key technical level here at 494, or the four technical level of 494, with the close at 497.5. So Friday trade for once could actually be kind of interesting and important. I've been a little bit disappointed in soybean price action because I my bias is that I still think that you know, that the soybean S&Ds could be tight, even though I know that the Chinese offtake right now is pretty slow. But maybe there's something I'm missing, and this market just does not seem to want to rally at this point.
Ellen Dearden of AgReview, your final word for the day?
Keep in mind that with the river system still botched up with low water, that Mexico has been the big buyer of corn here lately. That's not river dependent. So we're seeing some rail demand come into the central part of the Midwest.
And Brian Stark of the Andersons.
I think it's important, given we've talked about potential wide basis and the lack of demand, for the farmer to really look at his yield potentials on farm space and go through his mathematical calculations, especially as it comes down to crop insurance, potential indemnities, and what the best crop is to cash and move to town to generate cash. Because the bottom line is, it's a revenue game, regardless of the price forecasting we may or may not be able to project. I think you have to really look at your yields and the prices that you have for your local corn and soybean crop and make the best decision from a revenue perspective on which one you sell this month.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like. You can do that at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Ellen Dearden from AgReview out of Morton, Illinois, Brian Stark of the Andersons in Mansfield, Illinois, and Garrett Toy of AgTraderTalk.com out of Stockton, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.